keep it alive. Through these lines I write, I keep it live, cause I thrive. I might just blow your mind tonight. I'm so hyped, but it's no hype. From this height, it's direct hits on sight. I'm your type, lend me your ears to show you that there's something in me. I'm not giving up, I'm standing right here, holding these days hostage, and I'll make this my year. We turning fear into love, and the love's in the air. I love doing this cause nothing compares, nothing can share that same type of feeling. When you feeling them flares, they can't catch it, it's havoc. I rip to a tear, switch the scenario, my stereos, I leave them impaired. Variables start to change, and they're all in my range. I just gotta grab it, it's all mathematics. Every step is drastic, I make it fantastic. I'm trying to take your breath away, asthmatic.
This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no, through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no, through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo.
Yeah, just nod your head with it. So explicit and vivid. Every image is intricate, intimate. I put my all into it. No scrimmage and no rules. I'm a pro tool. Hear my heartbeat beating to the vocals. I'm so loco, lost my mind. Oh no, it's ponderoso, dope so. No overdose, cause it's dope, yo. Man, this is house grown, mixed with some milestones. So I let the style flow down like the Dow Jones. Bringing it with some foul tones, letting the crowd. No, we getting loud, so it's eardrum rudiments. Yeah, we bring it rude again. Move, little hooligan. Music for tuning in. Full time to the 10. I'm on my clock like I told you.
Happy Friday, everybody. This is DB, Anti-Media Radio, filling in for LaVon. Actually, we're going to have two special guests tonight, and they're going to be kind of guest hosting. I'm going to let them do their thing. We got Izzy, and we got April. And pretty much they're going to kind of talk about whatever they want tonight. LaVon's kind of out. She is doing a ride-along with the law enforcement community because, well, I don't know. I guess she likes handcuffs. You didn't hear it from me, but that's what I think is going on. So without further ado, I will let our guest hosts do their thing. Give me about a minute, and they will be on.
Hi, I'm April.
And this is Izzy.
And we want to both talk about natural healing types of things. I have some topics that I'd like to discuss, and I want to discuss these things with an open mind, just sharing ideas on theories that I've heard and how I've applied them in my life and my own experiences with them. So while you're listening, try to keep an open mind and just ask yourself if you can relate to what I am saying.
And I'm sitting here with my leg in a bucket of ice water because I broke it and they put some door hinge inside it. And now I have to soak my leg in ice water on a Friday night. I'm living the dream. Right, so we're coming from different perspectives. Hers being sort of an enlightened, educated, dare I say,
a spiritual journey that I've been on.
Exactly.
Basically.
And I was kind of just going out dancing and not thinking about ever being hurt or what it would be like to get old or to need help. And I broke my leg on a date. And now I've had this adventure in our healthcare system. I have Kaiser. And it's a dog and pony show. So I had no opinion to begin with, but now I'm kind of ticked.
At the service.
Right. Well, it's not the service. Individually, okay. They're nice. But on the administrative level, it's a behemoth that I don't know what I need. I need a new weapon. Maybe you can tell me about
new healing methods. because our society tells us to take as many medications as we can to mask the symptoms.
Girl, I was going to actually lay out my prescriptions.
It's ridiculous.
It's, I mean, and they just throw everything at you with the kitchen sink. I'm like, I'm not depressed. They're all, well, it might help the pain.
Yeah, and, you know, probably with this other medication we're going to give you for the pain, you will be depressed. So we're just going to cover that ahead of time. And just so you know, you're going to have some slight side effects that may annoy you from day to day, but we can give you something else for that, too. And
here's the side effect. You're going to sleep for 14 hours. Okay, I guess I wasn't in pain during that time. But it's a sleep you don't want to sleep. It's like dreamless.
Yeah, it's not
real. It's hard to wake up. It's like you're rising through a pool. It's not natural sleep as I've had it.
It's not. It does no good for your body, and then you just get nothing done.
And it doesn't even keep you out cold when the thing hurts.
No, and it doesn't help with the healing process either. So, some things that I... one of the magical ingredients that I have learned to incorporate in a lot of my meals is garlic. Garlic is so healing, and it's really yummy, and so the way that I like to cook it is just simmering it a little bit in some type of broth, either a chicken broth or vegetable broth if you're vegan. But just simmer it a little bit, just enough to take out that spicy bite to it, but retain the antibiotic properties. And it's so delicious, and you can add it in stuff, and I like to even just eat it whole. But garlic is magical. Use it topical, and it works in the inside too. And it's really delicious, and it's good seasoning.
Is it a garlic broth that you're making?
No, I like to eat the garlic. I just, the healthiest way to cook the garlic to make it so it doesn't burn your mouth and your entire digestive tract as it's being digested, you need to take the bite out of it just by cooking it a little bit. And the best way that I found to do that while retaining the healing properties is to simmer it lightly just for a couple of minutes. Just get it to a boil and then turn the heat off, let it sit for like 3 to 5 minutes, and then it's perfect. It retains so much flavor that way, and then you can drink the broth, and it's hydrating and delicious.
So you're chewing the cloves of garlic.
Yes, you eat the cloves of garlic.
Just chomping on them like carrots.
Yes.
Yeah, that sounds weird to me.
It's so delicious. But, I mean, you don't have to do it that way. You can slice it, and then you can add it to a soup.
Have you tried the roasted garlic?
Yes, and it's delicious too, or baked.
That is my... Now, what's the difference between roasting it and baking it? Temperature, I guess?
Okay.
So it liquefies when you roast it. I want to chase this back down. It liquefies when you roast it, and what happens when you bake it?
You know, I'm not sure. I usually simmer it.
I thought you were some kind of shaman.
Not yet. I'm working on it. But even I like to say, because people have often said, wow, you think you know everything, don't you? And I say, no, and I don't even pretend to. I know a lot about a few things. And a little bit about a lot of things. I like to explore a lot. So I get little tidbits of information here and there, but then some things I like to dive into. And one of the things that I've been diving into lately is energy healing, which will also help your body heal from injuries. It clears stagnant energy. There are various forms. Most of them I don't know enough about, and I would like to learn more, like Reiki. I know that Reiki... is like magic and heals a lot of people, and I'd like to learn more about that. But one of the things I've been learning a lot about lately is something called the emotion code, and it's something that Dr. Bradley Nelson discovered. He used to be a chiropractor, and then through meditation and spiritual searching, he discovered ways of healing the body through energy. And it's based on emotional energy that we get trapped in our bodies. And it was really interesting to me when I heard about that, because I had been looking for a way to naturally heal people. I have all kinds of ideas in my head, but could never really figure out an avenue that I would like to pursue as a lifelong career. And when this fell into my world, it seemed like it really fit exactly what I was looking for at exactly the right time. And... it was amazing. And what's amazing to me, too, is that all of the information that I have gotten from him that I've been able to use in my own life, I got for free. And, you know, when people would ask me, you know, or be skeptical about this guy and maybe say that he sounds commercialized, I say, well, he really is trying to sell his ideas because he knows that they work, and he genuinely wants to teach people how to heal themselves because he's tired of the industry that is going on in this country. It's really sickening and saddening.
Well, may I ask a, I'm sorry.
That's okay. Go ahead.
I wanted to ask the question, does this philosophy allow for purely physical injuries? It's not necessarily anything to do with like past life or trauma or any, you know, like in like a thing inside you that causes you to become ill. Does this philosophy allow for just spontaneous, God forbid, cancer? Just spontaneous, what have you?
Cancer is never spontaneous. Cancer always comes from some kind of a toxin, some kind of an energy field disruption at a cellular level. It's a lot of times I think, you know, these are theories that I don't know enough about to say that they're real, but from what I understand, a lot of it is due to stress and toxins and imbalances in our body that allow cancerous cells to grow and thrive on things that are not natural, things that throw our body out of balance. So we tend to get injured more easily, or we tend to get sick more easily because our defenses are weakened by toxins or energy fields and stress.
But what about the non-smoker who, God forbid, gets lung cancer?
I mean, that actually is specifically something that Dr. Bradley mentioned. And I can't remember the name of the lady that he was talking about. It was somebody that's well-known, but I just can't remember. But she went through a really huge ordeal with her husband dying and something in the media, and there was a lot of grief that she was going through, and she actually died of lung cancer. And what they've found is that it's because grief, he talks about different areas of the body that these emotions come from. Grief comes from your respiratory area, your respiratory system. It's one. It comes from there. When you feel certain, your liver generates anger and resentment, and that's one of the reasons when you drink, it stimulates your liver. This is according to the research that Dr. Nelson has done. It stimulates your liver, and that's why when you drink, you tend to over-sensationalize your feelings of anger and bitterness towards other people and self-pity, because those all come from there. And when people suffer a lot of grief, they tend to have respiratory problems or heart problems. And so definitely stress and toxins in your system.
But where is the cheerful drunk in this philosophy? There are people who drink and don't release their inner, I'm not sure if it's the id or the ego or something, but there are cheerful drunks and there are people who simply get sick. I have to resist the totalitarianism of what I think that you're telling me, which is that it's all self-inflicted, it's all in our head. I have to reject that.
For the most part, a lot of our suffering is inflicted in our head. It is due to our fears about what could happen or what we think people are thinking about us or what we think we might fail at or what we might be embarrassed about or how we might get hurt if we do this or who might break our hearts if we try to love somebody. It's all about fear for a lot of people of what might happen or might not happen, when in reality, that's creating your own misery because you're not following your dreams, you're not following your passion, and you're stuck nowhere, lost, figuring out where to go, and a lot of people succumb to that. And so a lot of times when you get to a place where you're really happy with yourself, then what other people do around you doesn't affect you as much. Or if it does, you're able to get past it faster because you realize that that's their shit that they're going through. That's not yours. And we all project our issues onto other people. It's just, you know, learning to identify when you're doing it and try to adjust your behavior.
Well, I can't disagree with that. Of course, I acknowledge energetic exchange and, you know, the idea of holding something in your body. I acknowledge that, but that there's no room. I mean, am I hearing correctly that there's no room in this view for just that poor woman who got that one disease, and she was happy as a clam. Nothing was wrong. No one had ever hurt her. It was all going well. But, you know, she was the one under Damocles' sword that time. Is there room?
Yeah, there's possibilities. Like, one of the things that I have really Dr. Wayne Dyer is one of my greatest heroes, and one of the things that he said to me, or not to me, well, I feel like he's speaking to me when he's, I see him on KBBS.
And
when,
late night, we've all seen him. Is he talking to you?
He really is talking to me. No, I feel like he is, because he sits down and he talks right at the camera. He talks, I mean, he looks at each person in the audience. He really makes a connection. I feel like he's talking to me. But he quoted Mark Twain, and this has become one of my favorite quotes, and I've been trying to live this every day. And Mark Twain said, "It ain't what you don't know that gets you into trouble. It's what you think you know for sure that just ain't so."
Mm.
So always keep an open mind, because facts change, beliefs change, and if you stick to your beliefs to the point where you're going to break down if you are forced to change your belief by some kind of new evidence that comes up, you're going to create your own hell. And it's best to detach yourself from any set of beliefs. You know, there are core things that if it feels right to you, it feels like you're aligned to the source of love in all of creation that connects everything. If it feels right and it feels good, it feels like the right thing to do, then do that. But, you know, that's one of the things I try to live by, and not follow beliefs and rules that are just, you know, kind of flexible, because information changes and you think one thing. We used to think the world was flat and people got killed for talking about it being round. People got killed for talking about the world not being the center of the universe. Oh, our Earth definitely is. Everything rotates around us. People died for trying to say, no, we revolve around that star and it goes beyond.
We are a strange species.
We are. We are. You know, which brings me to another topic that I love to talk about, and that's species from other planets, other worlds, you know. That's one that, although I don't have personal experience, other than one time when I was laying in the driveway looking up at the stars, and I did see some kind of a light that seemed like it did not move in any kind of a pattern that I have ever seen with any kind of, you know, military flying contraption or any airplane I've ever seen, but just the way that it zigzagged across the sky so quickly and then disappeared. It was very strange. But other than that, I've never had any real experiences with aliens.
Well, that's a UFO by very definition.
Yes, yes.
When did you see that?
21 years ago.
Was there any other sort of celestial phenomena going on that night?
Not that I know of. I was 13 and just hanging out with my best friend in the driveway, laying down looking at the sky, and we were talking about other things. We were talking about witchcraft, actually. We were talking about love spells. You know, we were 13, we were talking about love spells, and we were talking about manipulation of energy, which, I mean, I've always had this fascination with energy and always been able to imagine the flow of it and how it flows through us and how it flows through the air and how water flows through things, and how I've always had a deep, you know, sense of understanding of energy. So Wicca and energy healing have come natural to me. They resonate with me. And when you put together what I've learned from all the different religions I've studied that focus on love, then I understand how powerful your energy can be. When you focus on love, you can do so much. And there are a lot of studies about that that I've watched videos and read articles. And no, before anybody wants to know, I don't have anything that I can quote right now. It's all just collective memories. I don't focus too much on details. It just feels right to me because I've experienced it.
I've had a more recent sort of UFO experience. It was in the midst of a meteor shower.
Mm.
And I was perched on this hill. Like, I brought like a folding chair, and we had another one. It was just a perfect scenario to watch a meteor shower, which, if you haven't done that, do that. And just staring up, the two of us happened to notice the exact same thing, which was, as you said, a pattern that seemed, for certain, it wasn't one of the meteors, and otherwise, maybe I saw it in a science fiction movie, the shapes it was making. And like your story, it sort of, I thought it accelerated out of view. I really don't know. I'm actually wearing very Coke bottle glasses at this very moment, and plus it was night, but we both saw it. And that wasn't my first experience witnessing something I couldn't supply information to explain. The other time I was up in Northern California, I was in a youth cult, a military youth cult, more about that another time. And I was driving back to our base with a superior, I believe, that we were told to call these people. It's interesting how they break you down when you're in that environment. Yeah. But another time for that. The alien story is we were driving this switchback kind of coastal cliff road at night, and it's unilluminated, of course. And we saw this thing, we both saw it in the rear, sort of zipping along behind us, but it wasn't at what seemed to be street level. And we both saw it sort of zip off the edge of the cliff. Now, maybe we witnessed some kind of suicide. Maybe we saw a reflection of some kind, but we did both see it.
Interesting.
That being said, where's the incontrovertible evidence?
It's hard to find, because when it's there, somebody's quick to clean it up and hide it. A lot of the time, that's happening. People jump on it. As soon as anybody hears, oh, a couple of people make phone calls to the sheriff's office about lights in the sky, and all of a sudden the FBI is involved confiscating evidence.
What?
It happens. It happens a lot. There are theories that about a lot of people that has happened to, even as far back as the Nazis.
I would have thought the Nazis would have been into aliens.
They were very much into aliens and time travel.
Indiana
very,
Jones.
Very much. And they even had a society of sorcerers called the Vril Society. The Vrillians. They had the Vril Society, which was the men.
That doesn't sound gay at all.
It was like the spiritual army who was associated with alien activity and knowledge from the aliens that gave us our technology. Our war technology, all the power that Germany had was apparently, according to these people, was supplied by otherworldly sources, and it was because they were able to connect to this Vril energy, which is a Sanskrit word for the God energy that runs through us, that runs through everything, that they, through reading ancient Sanskrit, they were able to find the key to connecting with, several keys to connecting with this Vril energy. There are a lot of ways to connect to it, but they claim that one of the ways to do this is through your hair, that your hair is basically an extension of your nervous system and works like an antenna, and that's allowing you to pick up energies around you, but also if you know how to, and I don't know how to, but you people tend to be able to connect with other dimensional beings and get lots of information. And it's said that, Bach, actually, one of the most well-known composers ever, said that that's how he got his piece, Madame Butterfly, was through other dimensional source while meditating.
Didn't Paganini write Madame Butterfly? Or did they each write Madame?
I think
they both did. It is an iconic story.
But then also... Einstein even used to go into meditative states for hours upon hours and come out with all of this knowledge. And I'm not sure if he ever claimed that he got it from aliens, but I've read a lot of and watched videos about a lot of people who have gotten this information from them. And so the Vrillian Society, the Germans, the women, the sorcerers would grow their hair out. They would never cut it. And they would keep growing and growing. Is that that's how they were able to use their powers to their fullest, according to the myths? Because no one really knows a lot from what I've read about, you know, because a lot of things have been destroyed. Because of course they don't want people to know. But little things are found here and there. But when I started learning about other cultures who also believe in the hair thing, like Native Americans. Also, Native Americans grow their hair out because of the same reason, because it acts as a connector to their gods. And Native American trackers, I guess there was some testing that was done with an army who found that the Native American trackers were really, really powerful, really good, very intuitive, so they wanted to hire them. But as soon as they gave them their military cuts, they seemed to lose their power, and they asked why, and they said, because you cut my hair. So they did experiments, and they took like 100 guys, and they did half of them left their hair, half of them cut it. They all tested the same scores, really high scores on their tracking ability testing, but half of them that got their hair cut all lost their abilities to, for the most part. Some retained some, but most of them lost the majority of their tracking abilities because they said they couldn't sense their enemy anymore. They couldn't feel them coming, where before they could feel them coming from around the corner. They knew what direction they were coming from. They knew when they were coming. They knew, and they were able to defend. So it's really interesting. And then also you have Rastafarian culture, and that's exactly the same thing they believe about their dreadlocks. Their dreadlocks are like funneled antennae for Jah's energy. Jah being the spirit of God.
That's fascinating.
It is.
And to me it's counterintuitive because when you cut your hair it doesn't hurt. You would think something so essential, like if you cut a cat's whisker, which I will acknowledge that to my understanding cats use their whiskers for exactly what you're describing. So it makes sense, but it's my understanding cats have sensitivity in their whiskers.
They do. I think it's a different kind of antenna though. Your hair and your nails. It's more of, it doesn't have a feeling type of sensation like a physical, like a pain sensor in it, but it's more of an energy sensor. So even, that's why when there are, you know, there's spiritual energy or something like that in the room, ghostly activity, you'll get goosebumps, your hair will stand up. When you feel somebody walk up behind you, your hair will stand up on the back of your neck because you sense that energy. They are little feelers. I can't think of many animals that don't have some kind of an outward antenna of some kind. So it makes sense to me that our hair is that because it is so sensitive.
Yeah, we both sit here with short hair.
And that's why I started growing it out because I just learned about this like a few weeks ago and I've had my hair cut like this for months now, probably almost a year now I cut my hair again. But I've gone back and forth since 18 when I used to work at a hair salon just as the receptionist. So everyone wanted to play with my hair.
Sure. Was it the virgin hair?
Yeah.
Oh, indeed. You recorded.
So it went like from mid back. Actually, it was like to my lower back, my tailbone almost. And then it went mid back and then shoulder length and then whoop, shaved up the back.
They couldn't leave you alone.
Oh, man. A-line down the front. Beautiful. So many fun styles. But and I love having, you know, I do love having short hair. It's free and it's comfortable, and all I do is pull it back out of my face all the time anyway.
Exactly, and shampoo lasts so much longer. Do you use shampoo?
Yeah, although I've been trying to mix my own. I get like the Dr. Bronner's organic liquid. It's a hemp-based shampoo, and then I will usually use that, and I'll add some essential oils like rosemary. Rosemary is really good for your skin. It's also good for infections. It's good for respiratory issues too, and so it's good to have that in the shower because then the steam, you know, not only is it good for your skin, but the steam is good for your breathing and your pores. It's somewhat antiseptic too, and then also lavender because it's really calming. Although if you have conditions, I've read that if you have psoriasis, then lavender is not so great for it because psoriasis means, you know, it's your cells are overproducing. And so lavender promotes cell growth, so it might make it worse.
Huh.
So I haven't noticed a significant difference, so I'm not sure if that's true for everyone, but that's just what I read. But I like also orange essential oil. It's uplifting and invigorating. It's really nice.
So are you laundering your hair with like these essential oils and the Dr. Bronner's mixed together?
Yeah, I just put them directly into the bottle and then shake it up and shake it really well and just incorporate the oils into there. I like to get the unscented baby mild version so that I can add whatever I want to it to know that it's mild enough for him. It's all organic. It's mild enough for him, and then I choose the oils that I know are also going to be mild for him. And then basically I've been to a point where I try not to use too much of anything on myself, and I try to use minimal amounts and mostly just use water because I don't want the chemical buildup and all the stuff that is in everything these days. And I know there are organic products out there, and so I try to do what I can to use those and the ones that just have minimal ingredients and water-based and no dyes and perfumes.
You know, I hear that, and I so, like, what kind of hair do you have? When you wash it with, let's say, regular shampoo versus Dr. Bronner's, is it the same hair? How is it different if it's different?
I tend to have oily skin and oily hair.
Because I tried Dr. Bronner's. I want to be organic.
Dry scalp, too, at the same time.
And it was like I'd washed my hair with a handful of French fries.
It does sometimes leave like a weird coating to it. It feels like
okay, so that's validating.
Yeah,
I was like, am I just an extra greasy monkey?
Yeah,
like.
But from all of the ingredients that are in there, it seems like whatever it is that's coating your hair is probably nutritious for it. I would hope so.
It could well be.
So, yeah. Until it starts making my hair fall out. And right now, it's working for me, and I love the simplicity, and I love that it's organic, and I love that he has a bunch of spiritual quotes all over the bottle and different uses for it. I love that, and I love some of the other things, like there was a lavender olive oil skin cream that smelled so freaking good, and it felt so good on my hands. It was so awesome. I just got the little sample, though, and I never went back to get the whole bottle.
Oh, my gosh.
But she gave me the last three samples that she had, and they were pretty big, and they lasted a while, so that was awesome.
That was awesome. But you need to re-up.
Yes, I do.
For now,
I have olive oil, and I have essential oils. I have some lavender oil, so I can make do for now, but I do need to get some more, so it's pretty yummy.
Yes, and at the same time, I've been saying I'm about to make this tooth soap for, like, the past 3 weeks. This tooth soap. Have you heard about tooth soap, like tooth liquid soap, as opposed to toothpaste?
No.
It's a combination of, if I recall correctly, maybe coconut oil, or you can use Dr. Bronner's, and then you add, it's very simple, an essential oil to it. So, for example, peppermint or whatever you prefer.
Peppermint's good. Also, thyme. Thyme is antibacterial.
Ooh, that sounds wise.
And anti-inflammatory, and so is clove. But peppermint masks the flavor of the thyme. I've actually made a mouthwash with using a little bit of brandy, either brandy or vodka or something high proof.
Is this for in the morning? Because
well, no, basically what it's for is to help break down the oil so that they bind with the water. The oil, I mean, the alcohol helps to do that. So you only need a tiny bit, like a teaspoon or a tablespoon of the alcohol with like 20 drops of the oils and 2 cups of water. So it's really not much alcohol, and then you keep that, you know, a bottle of that, shake it up, and use a little cup of it for like a week or so, and then it works really well, and but the alcohol also works as an extra little bit of antiseptic.
Okay, so that being said, I have like a serious Listerine habit. I literally have to have it with me at all times, little bottle in my purse. Do you say Listerine to be as effective as what one might make at home? Is it acceptable? Is it unacceptable for any reason?
From everything that I've learned about things that are chemically processed, the thing that I would worry about is that it has a lot of chemicals in it because they're cheaper to use for the same. They all do the same thing as the brandy, but they have to put a lot. They put things in there to help break down. The antiseptics, they usually don't use essential oils, but they do have different ingredients that they need to bind together. So there are binding ingredients, and there are antiseptics that are usually chemically based, and there is always some type of coloring in there. So there are a lot of things in there that are, and a lot of them have fluoride too.
Man.
It tastes really good though, and it kills a lot of germs.
Burn feels like.
It does feel good. It's a good burn. It feels like it's killing a lot of junk in your mouth. And it is.
If I were a man, really I might shave and slap that on.
You know? Yes. And
bad idea.
And I won't be a hypocrite, because when I don't have time or resources like brandy to make my own stuff, I do use something that's somewhat equivalent, you know, to Listerine, because I do need to kill the bacteria in my mouth, and if that's all I have, that's what I'm going to use for right now. But I try to make sure that I find something that has fewest amount of chemicals in it, and definitely no fluoride in it, because I get too much fluoride already just from rinsing my mouth every time I brush my damn teeth. Ooh. And from all of the filtered water that I drink that doesn't have filtered for fluoride. So I get way more of a dose of fluoride than I need, and I refuse to put that shit in my teeth.
Now, I acknowledge what you're saying. I, too, have been turned against fluoride, but I wonder if you're aware of when fluoride became our enemy? Because when I was a kid, fluoride was good.
That's what they told us.
Yes.
It doesn't mean it was good, but that's what they told us. And there are theories about that. because it said that Hitler fluoridated the Jews to dumb them down, because what happens when you get too much fluoride is that it can calcify your pineal gland, and it builds up toxins in your system that kind of slow your thought process and make you more docile and controllable, according to a lot of theories. I don't know enough about it to claim that that's truth, so I won't even pretend to. But
it sounds like something Hitler would do.
Yes, it does. And also, how can our government really justify giving us a medicine? How can they really say, okay, we think that you guys should all take care of your teeth, but we really don't want you to go through dental decay, so we're going to go ahead and medicate you. It's forced medication, and that's what pisses me off. Whether it's good or bad for me, don't force me to take medication. That's not right. And that's my problem with it, because I don't know enough about it, but from what I hear, it causes way more problems than the good it does, because we're not just soaking our teeth in it and spitting it out. We're ingesting it. Every time we cook with it, every time we get filtered water that doesn't filter that out, we're ingesting it, and it's not good for our organs or our brain. And our pineal gland is said to be our third eye. That's our window to our soul and our connection to the source. So we're calcifying that and shriveling it up and closing that window. So then we need to find ways to detoxify it and cleanse it, because it's really hard to get around the fluoride in the water. Among other toxins that are in there that are everywhere. There are toxins everywhere, and I try not to focus and, you know, be scared about it or pissed off about it, because it just is. So I try to just, you know, find ways to detox from it. Lemon water is really good. Cilantro is good.
And, you know, by the same token, isn't citrus one of the most pesticide-ridden crops? So, where do you...
One of the things with lemons, though, is with pesticides, if it's a fruit that you can peel, then usually you're not eating the pesticides if you're peeling it off, because they usually stay on top, unless it's genetically engineered pesticides where they, you know, somehow get it in there into the seed or into the DNA of the plant. But if it's something that's on the peel that you can take off, then it's generally not as harmful. But then again, you can try growing your own, or go to a farmer's market where you can trust your local people who are growing their own if you don't have time or resources. I know a lot of people who have been really into the farmer's market lately, because it's helping out our community, and because, you know, some people like to say, and I totally agree with it, that if you stop showing up at your local supermarket, they're not going to notice. But if you go to your local farmer's market, it's going to help them pay their rent. Mm. Those are individual people who depend on your business, because they're, you know, a big part of their life is growing these fruits and vegetables and plants for you to consume. So you have that option.
And isn't that truly radical? The idea of, it's kind of an idea in vogue now, I see, on this World Wide Web, to do it yourself and grow your own and use cloth diapers. And it's wonderful that that's a trend.
I can't say I've used cloth diapers because I don't have time for that shit. Literally.
That works on so many levels, what you just
said. Except for burp rags. Burp rags. I use cloth diapers for burp rags. They work great for that.
Okay.
They're thick for absorbency and small enough to just lay over your shoulder. They're not bulky. They're awesome.
My thoughts are splitting in two directions now. One is that of the composting toilet. The other is that of certain other cultures, which shall not be named by me because I do not know their names, where they do not utilize any sort of diaper, and the children simply
run around and go somewhere.
Amok. I've heard of this. Have you heard of this?
I can imagine that it happens in places where they don't have the luxury of having cloth diapers or, you know, disposable diapers. If they don't have it, then, you know, what are they going to use? I'm sure some might try to use resources to try to make something if they could, but, you know, but I'm sure there are a lot of them. And if they haven't had the chance yet to get their kids potty trained, then yeah, I can imagine that they would just make messes all over the place.
But isn't there something to be said for negative reinforcement and utilization of resources? For example, would it be wholesome to have your child, your infant baby, or to whatever age they wear the diaper? I heard that astronauts have worn. Astronauts do wear them. Maybe astronaut dung would be desirable in this scenario.
Probably because astronauts, there's no gravity, so there's no telling which way it's going to go unless they're wearing diapers.
And my thoughts split again.
Okay, so the dung.
Would it be wholesome
<That's interesting.
laughs> to encourage your infant, your diaperless infant, you know, to run into the fields?
Yes, that's the first thing that I would want to do. If, you know, just like you do with puppies, because you don't, well, some people put diapers on puppies, but when you get a puppy, so some people do.
Who puts diapers on
some
puppies?
Some people do. People do. Some dogs, you know what, actually,
thing?
Some people do it when their dogs are menstruating. Some people
dogs
do it when
menstruate?
Yes.
What?
The bitches do.
Oh, God.
That's how you know when they're ready to mate. So
I had no idea.
Yeah, they get all swollen and they start bleeding, and then you know they make a mess. So some people like to put. They make little doggy panties that you can either put a diaper in there, or you can buy like a panty liner or a
astronaut
pad
diaper
or something. You know, put it in there. But some people have dogs that are going through you know, bladder issues or something, and so they put one on. So some people do it, and I understand it, because it's frustrating when they make messes everywhere, but usually, you know, you try to train them to go outside. So I would imagine that you could do the same thing in that situation, and there are techniques that I learned for when I used to work with dogs. I was a groomer for a few years, and one of the techniques that I learned to teach people is that you get a piece of newspaper and put it in the corner, and then, you fill like a big half of the room with newspaper, and then you gradually, you have to have a room that you can dedicate to that, and then you gradually make it smaller. You make you praise them for going on it, and then you make it smaller, 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 until it's one sheet of newspaper, and then when it is, you take that one sheet outside, or you can move it closer and closer to the door if you make it more comfortable, and then eventually outside. So then they're like, okay, this newspaper's outside, and then you dump it on the grass. When they go on it, you put it on the grass, and then they're like, oh, okay, so I go on the grass, and it's a gradual movement.
Now, is this to deal with canine menstruation?
No, that's for potty training.
Okay.
Yeah, menstruation's usually is very minor.
I literally had no idea about the female dogs. I mean, do female cats do this? Do all domestic animals? Do chickens menstruate?
That I don't know. I don't know, because they're egg layers. I don't know, and I don't know about cats either. I would think that they would be, like, that a lot of female species would, that it's not just us, because if they have the same type of system, but I don't know.
If any domestic animal in my experience seems suited to a period, it is a cat.
They're mood swings.
They're freaking moody.
Yeah, they are. They definitely are. They're very independent and very bipolar.
Yeah. Cat topic brings up a lot of stuff, doesn't it?
You know what? Actually, animals are along the line of one of the things I wanted to bring up about natural healing methods, because what happens when you get a pet, at least in my mind, when you get a pet, it should be because you want some type of a living animal that you want to bond with and have as a companion. That's why I like pets, because they're loving companions. I like to take care of things, and I like to love and be loved by things, living things, and pets can be a lot of fun to take places and teach tricks, you know, and do fun things, and it's fun to bond with them, and a lot of studies have shown that bonding with a pet does a lot for increasing your serotonin levels and your dopamine and all of your feel-good hormones. Bonding with a pet, actually the purr of a kitten, is a certain frequency that stimulates your feel-good emotions to be secreted. I am not completely clear on which ones right now, so I'm not going to try to quote them, but I have read that the purr of a cat is a certain frequency that stimulates positive emotion and healing and joy and peace and love and all of that stuff. And so I actually have a list of different things that I have I was taking some notes on a CD that I was listening to about how to use the energy around you, how to, some basic life rules to live by to be successful. And one of the things that he talks about is that it's very important to be happy, to feel good at every moment. Feeling good right now is the most important thing, because if you feel good right now, that's the frequency that you're vibrating right now. And basically, the way I've had it explained that I understand is your brain works like a radio, and when you think something or feel something, it has a frequency, and your brain sends it out, and your heart is the power behind that frequency. It's electromagnetic frequency, the source that, just like the Earth has, ours is actually the same frequency as the Earth, and it carries out that message, and you attract back the frequency that you're putting out. It's an electromagnetic frequency, so it's traveling electrically through the ether that's all around us, the energy that we can't see. It travels through it, and even though we can't see it, it's happening, and it's magnetic, so it's going to pull back whatever you're putting out, and that's how the law of karma works. And when you focus on good and just feeling good and being happy right now, that's what you're going to attract. And when you start focusing on the negative, you're going to attract that too. So people who tend to stub their toe in the morning and let it get to them start having all kinds of things happen that day. But if you can let go of it and change your mood and laugh about it, then break that cycle of karma. And that's a really interesting concept that I've been really trying to focus on and be aware of lately.
I have to admit I don't know much about karma. I mean, what is it? The idea is you do what you want done?
Yes, actually, it's exactly that. It's do unto like others as you would have. Basically the energy that you put out is the energy that's going to come back, because that is the energy. It's like a ripple effect, and eventually it will make its way around this web of energetic creation. It will make its way around and back to you. And so it's important to keep an eye on, be aware of your energy that you're sending out. Because when you treat people certain ways, that person might not treat you that way, but pretty soon somebody will. And it usually corresponds pretty closely to with your intensity of how you're putting that out there. If you're constantly picking on people, then people are constantly going to make you feel picked on, and it's going to be a vicious cycle. If you're constantly giving things to other people, people are going to give to you. And I actually have a really good example of that. A few weeks ago, I was struggling for a minute, and I had $8 in my wallet. And somebody came up to me at the park, at Balboa Park, and this guy did not have a bad energy about him. He came up, and he looked very humble, and he asked me, he said, I didn't make it to the welfare office before they closed today, and I was wondering if you could help out at all, you know, even a couple of dollars, I mean, a couple of change. He said, if you have a penny, I will take it. Just the thought alone helps. And I gave him $3 out of my $8. Mm. The next day, my family member, one of my family members, gave me $100 to help me with groceries. And another friend paid me more than I asked him to groom his dog. I love his dog, and he's so sweet, and he's so cute. And, you know, I charged him $25, and he gives me $40. And I love him. And, you know, this was the very next day.
Wow.
I said, you know what? This guy really, really touched me. He looked at me he almost cried when I gave him this $3 and was so appreciative. And I actually gave him a hug, and he was really touched by it. And I felt good about it. And I knew, because at first I was like, oh man, what do? I only have $8 and I don't know where my money's going to come from next. And I did it anyway with an open heart and knowing that will come back to me. I know it will, because I've experienced this in the past. It always comes back to me. And this is actually, this pattern with the money has been going on now for a while. When I give a little bit, I get a little bit. And sometimes the amount of thought and feeling that I give behind it is more powerful than the amount that I give. Mm. Because giving it shouldn't be about how much. It should be about how much you care about what you're giving and who you're giving it to.
Mm.
And that's what makes the biggest impact. It really all comes down to, from everything that I've read about spirituality and religion and all the differences in the religion and the barriers, it's all just human error. But when you think about all the messages that everyone was trying to send, regardless of your beliefs about who these messengers were, where they came from, which I have some crazy theories too that I've heard that make sense, you know, but they all have the same message: love. Love yourself. Love other people as though they are yourself, because we are all expressions of the source, and we're all connected to each other. So whatever you do to yourself or to other people is all going to come back to you anyway. So view other people as though they're connected to you, and treat them with love, and treat yourself with love too. And
I'm wondering how, I mean, that story, that is a wonderful, that's one of those moments where you feel sort of uplifted out of the ordinary day-to-day of life. Just beautiful, sort of transcendent, connected moment, and that's so wonderful.
I've actually been having a lot more of those lately, and I have to say, it was largely in part to watching and reading anything that Wayne Dyer, I could get my hands on from Wayne Dyer. Seriously, he is magical.
I have to admit, I only have glimpsed him in like a baggy sweater on late night telly.
Oh, man. Yeah, he likes to be comfortable. He likes to wear a blue sweater that says love, period. Because that's one of his biggest teachings, too. That's like the basis for a lot of what he teaches. It's all about love and acceptance and tolerance and forgiveness for yourself and everyone else. And yeah, it's really powerful. And it's one of the biggest... it's one of the biggest components of healing too, the love for yourself and accepting yourself as you are. And he tells us, actually his daughter told a story about when she was 7 and she had these bumps, and they were on her face, and they wouldn't go away. And she lived in Hawaii. They lived in Hawaii at the time, and the doctors said you have 2 options. One of them would be to try to burn them off of her. And the other one was to take some medication where she wouldn't be able to go in the sun. And she's like, I live in Hawaii, and I'm so, you know. so they said, well, the other option is you can try to talk to them and make them go away. So she's like, okay, that sounds like a way better option. So for 3 nights in a row, she talked to her bumps. She told them, basically, I'm paraphrasing, but she told them, I love you, but I need you to go somewhere else. I don't need you around anymore, so please go away. And then she would, you know, touch her face and imagine it being smooth. Imagine them disappearing and imagine her face being smooth. And on the 4th night, she said she did this every night right before bed. The 4th night, she talked to them and she put her hands up and they were gone. 4th night, she said. So when they asked her, what did you say to them? And she told them, you know, she just felt love for them and asked them nicely to go away. And they were amazed because they thought for sure that she would have, like, waged war on them and threatened them or something. But, you know, she's like, I was 7, and I didn't think that way. I thought in a 7-year-old mind, and the thing that made it work, I think, is that I had no doubt that it would work. She said, these days people say, oh, well, I'll try this, but if it doesn't work, then I'll try that. Or, you know, there's some level of doubt in there. And one of the key components also to healing is the belief that you're going to be healed. And that's part of the placebo. That is the placebo effect. That the biggest part to any medicine is the belief that it's going to work. And if you don't feel like it's going to work, then chances are it won't. And so a lot of what I've studied lately about a lot of is that everything comes down to love and belief. Whatever you believe to be true, you are going to bring into your reality, depending on how strongly you feel about that belief. Because you can have all kinds of beliefs. I believe, you know, or, you know, I have different opinions on things that, you know, foods that I don't like. But,
you bring up these concepts, and I find them almost... heartbreakingly optimistic. I mean, I hear that story you tell about the little girl who sort of willed through her simple, pure faith this physical change, and I want to believe that story. I don't disbelieve that story, but I know that we live in a world in which, unfortunately, you know, who says that other person's will wasn't as pure, her lack of doubt wasn't as complete? And perhaps that acknowledgement, maybe it's the blind faith of the child that makes such a thing possible. But then we all know children do get sick, and they don't necessarily heal themselves. And it's more serious than an acne or
a
sprain. You know, it's something more concrete.
Yeah, and there are so many different cases and so many different variations and situations and so many different factors. And I think that a lot of it plays, when you grow up in a home where there isn't a lot of fear involved. Mm. Dr. Wayne Dyer tried to live a life based on love, not fear. So he taught his kids to live a life of love based, you know, not fear-based. You know, do you make decisions in your life based on love for yourself and love for other people, or do you make decisions based on fear of what might happen if you don't do this? So at the age of 7, and her being exposed, she was the youngest. So she, you know, Wayne Dyer was already so far into his spiritual journey that that's what she was mostly exposed to. So she naturally went to love. Where in today's society, kids grow up with all kinds of fears imposed on them by their parents and other classmates and teachers and media, you know, Facebook. Kids are all over Facebook and Instagram and watching all kinds of crazy movies. And although there's a lot of good information in a lot of movies, a lot of it is fear-based. So we're growing up, we're being bombarded by fear all the time. And it's hard sometimes to get away from that because it's so ingrained in us. Like, they're breaking us down with fear, because when you're fearful, you don't move ahead. And they don't want us to move ahead. There are people in this country who do not want us to move ahead. And although, no, I can't quite quote any sources, with all the information that I've gotten, I feel like there's a lot of truth to it, that there are people who are in power and feel like a lot of our society is diseased and it would be better to just wipe them all out, or us, because from a lot of the things I've read, I'm included in that, because I'm trying to change the world and because I am, you know, not conforming to a lot of societal restraints and ideas, and I don't always feel that I agree with authorities and what our government is doing. So so I'm in part of that population, a poor community, that they're trying to wipe out too. And I feel it happening, and a lot of connecting dots say that it's happening. So I have strong feelings that it probably is somewhere, that somebody is trying to cleanse the population so that they can start fresh. You know, just like the flood that Noah built the ark for. And you know, there are a lot of different cultures who have different varying stories that are exactly the same, and they've found evidence of a giant flood and around these times. And so they know that the flood happened, and there are various times that different things do wipe out civilizations, or they do wipe out entire species, or so these things happen. And there, I think there's a group of people that's trying to make it happen so that they can, you know, have more power, because the more people there are, the higher the chance is that somebody's going to take that power from them. And there are some very money-hungry people, power-hungry people out there.
You're talking about the increasing stratification of our culture, where there are these ultra-wealthy and sort of the rest of us kind of working full-time at Walmart and trying to get those benefits from the government so we can actually feed our children. That's what you're touching on, and you're suggesting it's a part of a plan. It's not just happening.
To divide and conquer, basically.
But what will they do
global
without
cleansing?
So the idea is, what, a society moving toward increasing mechanization? They don't need us to pump their gas, so to speak?
Not if they have their own resources. I think that they're trying to, you know, do whatever they can to gain control, and I think, you know, that they don't really need us. They have their own societies where they have plenty of people to do things for them. And I think that they're trying to cleanse things and repopulate with their own ideas.
Now, it's 8:59, so
yeah,
it's impossible for me to ask
you
Like, is this the cast of Eyes Wide Shut that we're talking about? That is this ultra elite cabal that we. Unless you can tell me in 22 seconds.
We don't have a lot of times, but, you know, the group that I am talking about is the infamous Illuminati, you know.
I think we have to stop on Illuminati.
Yeah, time's up with that, but maybe we'll continue this next week.
Nothing in my databanks about the Illuminati.
Well, I don't have, you know, a lot of... Stereo. Yo, here we go through the stereo.